spot.
Great.
Hi, hello. Welcome to the Sex Sales Podcast. This is your host, Eliza. And today I am joined here by my favorite guest and your favorite guest, Matt from Men With Manners. How are you going?
Well, after that intro, better than ever. Thank you, Eliza. Great to be here.
Well, you've been my only guest so far, I think. but still my favorite. Top number one.
And I'm confident I can retain that position.
Yes, we brought you back by popular demand. So Matt and I are going to get a little bit juicy tonight, get into some of the nitty-gritty questions you guys have been sending us. It may be a little podcast, like a mini app, we'll see. But we're going to go kind of like quick fire on some questions we've been sending through. But before we start, Matt, first of all, who are you? How are you?
I am Matthew. I never know how to answer this question. I'm the owner of Men With Manners, and I provide dating and relationship coaching to men. I help make good men better, to sum it up. And how am I? I'm doing extremely well. Life is very good at the moment.
Oh, that's beautiful.
How are you?
Great. I think. Well, Glad to hear that. Let me think. I think I'm good. Yeah, I'm pretty good.
Good.
Yeah, you know, actually, have you ever had one of those moments where you like say, you talk to someone from real estate, and I made like basically I had a casual conversation with a real estate agent, and I don't know how this came up, but he was like, "I'd love to give you an appraisal of your house," and I was like, "Sure, yeah, maybe," and then had zero intention of that happening, and he kept calling and emailing me because I told him which house I had bought from his coworker 3 years prior. So he had my name and number on the system. He kept calling him Emily and didn't respond to anything. And today he showed up at my house at like 6 p.m. being like, "Hey, just wondering if I can come by sometime." And I'm like, "God, why are you so pushy?" Like,
yeah, that's 6 p.m. Look, I get it. Yeah. People are usually home from work and whatnot. But a polite, "Yeah, maybe we can do that at some point," to rocking up at your house.
Yeah.
It's a bit aggressive.
Yeah. And I was like,
which is a shock for a real estate agent. They normally say,
"So considerate."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I was like, "Oh, didn't you think like, because I wasn't replying, maybe it meant no, like I probably should have just said no." That's my lesson to learn. But also, if you're falling into the category of relating to that guy, stay tuned to hear about our upcoming workshop, because it is hard to read the signs from women. And actually, just before I started this podcast, I had a couple coming through being like, how do I know when go is a go and when no is a no?
And a great question, that's a basic one though.
If someone's not replying to you, take it as a no.
Yeah,
if you're in real estate, pay attention. Okay. Let's get going. So also, I will add to that, because Matt's like intro was so humble, as per usual. But I keep saying this every time. There is no one else I would ever recommend that is a man and is a dating coach other than Matt. He's the only person I think that meets all the ethical and amazing transformative boundaries and experiences with clients. So I think if you ever want to work with a man on dating or confidence, and you're also a man, Matt's the guy for you. Men with Manners is so worthwhile. And every time, like now I have like my clients messaging me being like, "If it weren't for people like you and Men With Manners," and I'm like, "No, what about just me?" Just kidding.
I love that.
He'll be listening to this feeling bad now. No, I actually really appreciate that. Okay, let's get in. Let's start with a juicy question straight off the bat. Here's one I got. "I'm a single guy. Limited sexual experience. What are your thoughts on hiring an escort?"
Oh, okay.
Got you. Take it away first.
If I may.
I want to know your thoughts.
So I've had this a bunch of clients or Instagram followers have asked me this before. And I think it comes down to if you see sex as something like getting the monkey off your back, like if you're able to view the first time you have sex so transactionally — I'm not saying you view sex transactionally, but like that first time, you just want to get rid of it. You just don't want to feel like a virgin anymore. Like you feel like there's a stigma attached to it. Then I don't think it's a problem. And look, that's, of course, it has to be between two consenting adults. That's assuming all of that stuff. But what I would say though, is that if you expect that when a guy loses his virginity, he becomes this incredibly sexually confident man and he's ready to go out there in the world and seduce many other women. It's not the case at all, gents. it's not the case. So, yeah, so I guess my point here is, if it's something you can view transactionally, if it's not something where you'll be riddled with guilt and anxiety after it happens and feel like a loser for it, which you shouldn't, by the way, I'm just saying that that's what our brains can tend to do after we do something like this. And you've got low expectations around how much you think it's going to boost your opportunities with other women, then go for it. That would be my take.
Love it. I agree. Thank you. And this is interesting you get messages about that, because this is something I get asked all the time as well, like surprisingly frequently, about not just even losing virginity, but just getting more experience or whatever, or like, I want to settle down, but I want to have one last hurrah and I feel unethical about just sleeping with someone, and, you know, how hard is it going to be, or how easy will it be to just find someone to sleep with? So should I just get an escort? Is that okay? Blah, blah, blah. I think it's absolutely fine. What I will say is, like you kind of said, it's, well, also, first of all, actually, it's not quite like how you're going to think it's going to be. I know a lot of sex workers, I know a lot of escorts. From when I studied psychology, there was a few in my class, and I was shocked because I kind of had the stereotype in my head from what I'd seen in like film. it was nothing like it. Like, some of them were like mums of five, just your everyday average woman kind of thing. And one thing I know from people that have messaged me that had since gone and seen escorts is you have to be aware that it can be an extremely, at times, maybe majority of the time, clinical experience, where they will inspect your penis if you're a man and say, wash again, just as blunt as that. Get back in the shower, wash again, throw a condom, put this on, that's it. Don't touch here, don't touch my nipple, don't kiss. Like, and if that makes you lose your confidence, and sometimes men in particular can get in a cycle where you have one experience connected with sex and then you connect that, like, that becomes your neural network every time you have consequential sexual interactions. So if you have, let's say you have an escort, she throws a condom at you and says, put this on, and you're like, oh my God, this woman hates me or whatever, but to her, it's just her job, and you lose your boner and you're having a shitty time. The next time you're presented with sex, your body remembers that anxiety and stress, and, you know, could result in performance issues or performance anxiety. So just to keep that in mind. However, though, I do think that most people I know that have seen escorts have had a positive experience with it. Yeah. And the thing I always tell people to be careful about, though, is if you have a really positive experience and you like surge with dopamine and serotonin, you're going to kind of want more of it. Like, you get, you're just like, holy shit, if you can afford it, like, it makes a lot of sense. But you have to be really, really careful, not just about the ethics of, you know, transactional exchange in order for sex, but for what, how that works with your brain and how that may rewire your brain if it becomes, it's very easy to go downhill, basically, is what I'm saying, and become an addiction. And then you're continuously looking at women and seeing their value as like sexual beings, for example. So I would recommend, if you want it as an ongoing thing, pick one and stick to her. Like you would a situationship. Find someone you like, sleep with her, and have that be your ongoing thing, I think, rather than shopping around. That's where the danger starts. Does that make sense?
Awesome points. Awesome points. That's so true. To all of it. There's actually nothing I have to add there that I feel I could add more value there. One thing I just remembered, a client said to me that he slept with an escort and he was concerned because as he was nearing the moment of completion, she offered for an extra $100, he could take his condom off, and he took it off. So don't ever do that. They're making, we can all make impulsive decisions when we're near the point of completion. Don't fall prey to it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, great points, Eliza.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I'm shocked at that because I've always thought that sex workers were the most rigid with sexual health.
You think that, right?
Yeah. How interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of taking condoms off, I had one. Okay. I want to find love, but I have herpes and have had multiple rejections after telling potential partners. Is there any hope for me? Oh, this poor person.
Yeah, got you. Yeah, bloody hell. That's tough.
Yeah, it makes me so sad. Yeah, I think, first of all, statistically, 50 to 80% of people have herpes. Probably 80% of people. It's just dormant in most people. Like literally wow. 8 out of 10 adults in Australia and America have a strain of herpes. It is so prevalent. Bloody almost hell. Everyone you sleep with has herpes. it's just people that not very often, 1 in 8 people, I think, will have physical symptoms of herpes, whether it be like genital warts or cold sores and things like that, or mouth sores. So for them, it's more important for them to disclose. So I think that a really big part of it, first of all, whoever wrote this, I admire that you've like, you're actually telling your partners this. I think that's really like amazing.
Agreed.
That you do that. And it's the ethical decision to make. But I think that when you tell people, it's really worthwhile providing some information, like an education piece, like, because most people don't think that. They like think, oh my God, if you have genital warts, you get it for life. That's it. Game over. Stay away or whatever. But in reality, almost everyone has a strain of it and can exhibit it, but just don't throughout their symptoms. And when you aren't, if you don't have current symptoms, and you are using protection, the risk of transition is so minimal. It's absolutely like so tiny. And you should know if you have symptoms to just not engage in sexual interactions. Like think of it like, you know, when a mother has a cold sore and she kisses her baby, the risk of passing that herpes virus onto her baby is extremely, extremely risky, right? Like it's when babies get herpes, it's deadly to them because it becomes like a virus or illness, I don't know. But they don't tell mothers, don't ever kiss your baby. It's just when you have the flare-up, do not kiss. But outside of that, it's absolutely safe for you to kiss and engage, like not engage with your baby, but you know what I mean. Like have your saliva touch them or whatever. If you kiss them on the head, it's safe. So I think it's really worthwhile providing that education piece to your potential partners. What do you reckon?
I think there are some great points there. All of it I agree with. I also admire the fact that this gent's obviously telling partners before they do anything. Like, my full respect to you for doing that. I'm not going to sugarcoat it because obviously, and based on your anecdotal experiences, by the sounds of things, it's been a bit tough, but I've never met a single person who doesn't feel like something is holding them back from fulfilling their full sexual potential, their ability to attract people. So while I'd say, like, if we're comparing pursuing women with sales, maybe you have to knock on a few more doors, but someone will eventually answer. I think it is just maybe going to take a bit more work and a bit more work of finding the right sort of understanding person for it. But I can't imagine a person not wanting to make you their life partner because of that, particularly for the reasons you said around transmission rates being so low, provided it's not flaring up and whatnot. I get cold sores occasionally on my mouth, and I'm not going to compare that with having it on your genitals, obviously. I can imagine that's very difficult. But, it's I actually don't know what the point was of telling you that. But,
removing the stigma.
Exactly. Let's remove the stigma.
Yes. Exactly.
And in terms of, is there hope for you? Absolutely. So long as there's air in your lungs and you aren't willing to give up on it, there is. And just a quick one more holistically for finding a woman in general, it is, and I see it every day. I speak to many men every day that are looking to meet someone. It's one of the the fucking hardest thing you can ever do is find someone to be your partner, be it for a short while of your life, that you are compatible with and you're attracted to and whatnot. Yeah, it's a really fucking hard thing. And if it was an easy thing, it would be nowhere near as valuable as what it is. So yeah, I guess the point there is, like, just don't give up on it, man. There's going to be a bunch of times where it's going to feel really deflating, and particularly when you get a negative reaction to it. But you've just got to keep going, because there are millions and millions of women out there somewhere that wouldn't have an issue with it, and all the rest of your brilliant traits will far outshine it.
Absolutely. We don't know if this person's a man, by the way. They were like
completely anonymous. Oh, my apologies. Sorry. I assumed everyone was a man, but please, listen again, but change just the gender for me. Yeah, it applies to everyone.
Yeah, so true. It's one of those things where it's like everyone brings a flaw. Like, can you imagine, like, when I was single telling people, I'm vegan, oh, and I don't drink alcohol either. Like, it's people are like, nah, sorry. You know, it's not everyone's cup of tea, and it's the same thing. And it's just about finding people that are, and I also don't know what this person's age is, because I do find that, for example, I've had a conversation with a client about expressing like kink and fetish. And it's very different when you're at 21 and talking about that to 21-year-olds compared to when you're 30 or older, where those conversations are generally much more accepted and less taboo and normal to say, whereas they're like, you're into this? And it's so mild kind of thing. So I think that don't catastrophize it in your head. If it makes you feel better, I've slept with someone with herpes and I never got herpes. Protected there sex, like literally. And he was very kind and told me beforehand, said, this is how it's managed. There hasn't been a flare up in this many months. And I was like, go for it. Pop it in.
Cool.
There you go. Everything was happy days. And let me tell you, I'm sure you've experienced this with your wife, but when you're pregnant, you get fucking STI checks like 10 times during your pregnancy, because they're really fearful if you have a natural birth and an STI present, and something goes, you know, it's in your vaginal canal as you're birthing and it goes to your baby, it can be extremely deadly. So if anyone were to know if they have an STI right now... It's me. I can't stop getting fucking checked for it all the time. It sucks, but...
Yes. Bloody hell. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. The blood samples and the pee samples are constant when you're pregnant. Yeah, don't miss that. When Adrian had to get a blood test last time, like a few months ago, for the first time in like 6 years, and he was such a baby about it and was so stressed. And I was like, in my last pregnancy, I think I had over 30... like blood tests. I think my blood was drawn like at least 30 times in 9 months. And
oh my God. Yeah, that's actually ridiculous. Yeah, come to think of it, Amy is constantly going to doctors. So it's tough out there.
it's tough out there. And then I would have to get like remedial massages because my hips would hurt so much in pregnancy. And I found this one woman, her name's Tina, and she was like, God, this woman is so fucking strong. I've never had someone put me in that much like pain, but in a good way. She was really, really strong. And I said to Adrian, I was like, you have to, like, you know, you're a big strong man, you're a landscaper, you have to go to Tina. And he did, and he came home and he like lay on the couch and was like, get a bucket, I'm gonna vomit. It was the worst experience of my life. I've never been in so awesome. Much pain. He was like, this is 100% worse than what childbirth would be like. That was absolute torture. And I was like, don't talk to me for 3 hours. I can't even.
That's so funny when dudes do that. And I do that with my wife as well, just to be a pain in the ass. Like, yeah, there's that meme of like, if a woman, like the man flu, basically the meaning was, you know, the man flu is 10 times worse than childbirth for a woman. But yeah, that's classic. Nice one, Adrian.
Yeah, don't even get me started on this right now. Okay, let's go on to speaking of kinks and shit. Here's one. When should I discuss my sexual preferences with a date? I have strong sexual preferences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What do you reckon?
How do you interpret strong sexual preferences?
I'm kind of getting it like they've either got a kink or a fetish.
That's what I assume as well. Yeah. My thought would be if you're you mentioned you have strong preferences, whether they're strong as in particularly unusual or uncommon, or if they're strong because you can't enjoy sex unless you're fulfilling your preferences, I'll assume it's the first one. And I would say if you at least enjoy vanilla sex, the normal stuff, then I would say for the first few times you should have sex that way. She should be sexually comfortable with you, I think, first before you start to reveal this stuff. Again, it's all dependent on who she is as a person, how open and understanding she is, and obviously to what extent your sexual preferences are. To what extent they are. That'll do. So I would say have sex a couple of times first before you bring them up. That would be my gut instinct on this. What are your thoughts, Eliza?
Yeah, I think you're spot on the money. If it really depends on if it's like strong because it's something unique or intense to the general public, or if it's strong because you can't achieve sexual satisfaction without them. Because if you can't achieve, like I'm working with a client right now who cannot achieve any sexual satisfaction unless he is engaging in his fetish. So in that case, I've been telling him, disclose your fetish, because this is a compatibility thing now. Like if it was a kink where you're like, oh, true, I wouldn't mind a golden shower every few months or something, you can hold out on telling them that, or you can tell them straight away, I don't care. Like it's up to you. There's no right or wrong. It depends on, I guess, you gauge how open they are, if they're interested. And like Matt said, if you're happy to engage them without it, that's fine. That's just a kink. But if it's a fetish where you're like, I will not even achieve any resemblance of sexual satisfaction unless there is a stream of urine on me or something like that, then just yep. tell them, like, cut the bullshit for you both, just come out and say it. And some people will just be like, yeah, cool, you know, like you'd be so shocked at how little these things can be to other people that are massive to you or to someone else. The only other thing I will say is that what I find common with women, I'm just imagining if this was written by a woman, and their like strong sexual preferences can sometimes be of almost like a darker nature, like consensual non-consent is really, really common, which is basically like rape fantasy, or like degradation is really common as well. And I think that that's something that you really need to be, that you need to treat really carefully and be conscious of if there's like a trauma background there as well, that when you're asking someone to abuse you, if it's not in a way that is safe, or like BDSM, if you've got whips and chains, it's kind of different. But if it's not in a controlled environment, but you're just putting yourself in a cycle of self-punishment again and reliving trauma, just be really conscious of that, and seek support prior to seeking dick, basically, is what I would get at. Yeah. Yeah. There is such a wide variety of like what people can be into. It's so hard to gauge without like knowing what it is. I wish next time you guys send this in, tell us what the sexual preference is. We want to know that. This, like, don't tease us with it.
Yeah, please. Yeah, this is great fun for us. Yeah. I'm joking, of course. We take it very seriously. But yeah, that's again, excellent points. I agree with everything you said.
Okay, I'm interested in your response on this next one, because I feel like we could have different replies. Is it ethical to practice flirting on people that you're not interested in?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So is it ethical to practice flirting? I would say that it depends on your intentions. Like if you're flirting with someone because you want to manipulate them, or you want them to do something for you, or you're trying to deceive them in some way, or you want to prove to your friends that you can make that girl like you, then I think it makes you a dickhead. Like I think that's unethical. However, I would say harmless flirting between two consenting single adults, where it's like if it gives them a nice little ego boost and they enjoy it, and you're strictly doing it because you want to practice your flirting a bit, and you're not making any over promises about how you're going to take her out, and that you're not promising, he or she the world. I've got to stop pretending it's just dudes asking these questions. Then I think it's fine. That would be my thought.
Yep. Yeah,
what do you reckon?
I actually agree. but what I will say is, though, I think I've learned now from not encouraging my clients to do that, but not necessarily discouraging it if they were to say, like, should I do this, or I've practiced this. What I will say is that if you're comfortable, there's a difference between talking to women. Let's say if this is a man writing this. Wait, did it say? I don't know. But let's just say there's a difference between talking to women and also talking to women you're sexually attracted to. And like I have a client who has heaps of, he's got sisters, he's got female friends, very close with a lot of women in his life, but it's, and I was like, well, can you just apply that to, you know, when you approach a woman at bar? And he was like, well, it's the sexual like tension and fantasy that's what makes me nervous. So I don't really know that it's going to be so effective. I think it's good to practice conversational skills, but mm-hmm. it's more important to practice conversational skills with someone that you're actually kind of like, why not practice on someone that you're sexually interested in or attracted to? Because if it goes well, then whoa, you, well done. You've done it. Like, why not?
That's actually a great point. It's like, yeah, I hadn't considered it from that perspective. It's like, if there's absolutely going to be nothing in it, if they like you back for you, if there's nothing in it for you, if they like you back, then yeah, what's the sense in it? And is that even prepping you to then go flirt with the person that you particularly like, or will the same insecurities preventing you from doing it in the first place just flare back up?
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely something to consider.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. How do I address the topic of sexual compatibility with a partner? And what steps can I make to ensure our needs and desires align?
This is definitely an Eliza question. I don't even know where to start on this.
I think it's an interesting one because I've gone through this myself where basically I'm going to not interview, but I'm going to inquire and get information on whether like sexual compatibility would align. I mean, when I was single, not currently, because what's important to me may not be important to someone else. And sometimes you may feel like it's a clinical thing to come on and be like, what are your expectations of like, I'm assuming like once you've started a relationship or even once you date more than a few dates in, we're like, don't ask it on the first date because you will seem like a creep, especially if you're a man, you will absolutely seem like a creep because I'll tell you, most men have asked me that on a date and I'm like, oh, here we fucking go. Like, how much sex do you think like you'd be into having like this? And but when it's asked a few dates in, it's completely different when you're like, I see an mm-hmm. investment in you and I'm asking this because I want to know like for our compatibility, rather than when you ask it immediately, it feels like I'm leading you into a conversation of that's going to get sexy kind of thing, which is fine, but let me tell you, extremely cliche. So I would say, yeah, wait a couple of days or wait until your relationship, but absolutely have the conversation early on and see where it sits on your, like, how important is it to you? Because some people will say it's a 10 out of 10 absolute must in their relationships to have like ongoing and frequent sexual interactions, and other people were like, I really enjoy it, but it's not the most important thing to me. Like, I will prioritize self-care above sex, I will prioritize rest above sex. And for other people, it's like, I just don't have any priority for it. And it's hard because my big thing is like, well, do you say it before or after the honeymoon period? Because it's very different when you're in that honeymoon period. You genuinely have a lot of sex. I just say ask during both. Like, ask before and after.
Good point.
And, like, I have absolutely literally said, like, is this the level of sexual interaction you would, like, consider normal for you to maintain throughout the remainder of, like, you know, your relationship or our relationship? Like, is this normal for you, or would this be like just like that kind of new relationship excitement? So I think that I'm just assuming we're talking about like frequency to begin with here. So getting on the same page with that and where people place their value on that is so important. And also, like, how much do you value what do you contribute to sex and what do you expect to be contributed back? I think this is especially important for women to ask. Like, sadly, do you go down? Like, just fucking ask it. Because so many times I've just heard women over and over and over again say, he's so great, but he doesn't do this. And he doesn't make it up in any other way. And they're left sexually dissatisfied. And then they're too impolite because he's such a good guy. And then they wait 9 months and then they end up breaking up with him. And not telling him the proper reason or whatever. So I think it's like important to gauge, you know, that's how do you make someone feel sexually satisfied? Like, how much do you prioritize their needs as well? What do you think?
I didn't disagree with anything. I'm just trying to not say the same thing every time.
it's two brain cells.
Just a couple of things based on what you said that I would add with further agreement is, like, don't feel weird about having the conversation. And because it's like, oh, but won't I look like a loser if I bring up how much sex she wants to have or what her preferences are? Like, aren't I supposed to just kind of know that because I'm a man and that's my job? Don't think of it like that. And it's more about how you deliver the conversation. Like, if it's coming from a point of, am I making you happy? Am I good enough? If it's a validation seeking mission, then it's, that's where it can get a little bit, dorky. I don't know what the word I'd use there, but, where it can be a bit uncool. But if you're approaching it from a curiosity, you're mature about it, you're pretty casual with the way you're having the conversation, and it's more from a case of like, I want to make sure that we're both getting out of this relationship sexually what we want, then I can't imagine there's anything wrong with that. And if you've got a rational partner, I'm sure they'd be happy to have that conversation. It's so true that you should ask the question. If you have asked the question during the honeymoon period, you should ask it again afterwards, because there's certainly a change in whether it's frequency or the type of sex you're having. It's a little more uninhibited perhaps at the very start. Otherwise, yeah, I think that's probably all I would add for that. But a great answer from you.
Another thought came into my head when I said women are more likely to hesitate when asking about, like, how much someone might contribute to the bedroom. But I realized, like, I know I've worked with a lot of people, or men in particular, that have said things like, oh, you know, we dated for like 9 months and never had sex, or we did like once or twice, but they didn't want to ask them why not, because they were really conscious of being respectful and didn't want to come across like pushy or anything. And so the intention was really beautiful and really sweet, but it's so like, I was like, God, like almost a year and you hadn't asked and thought, hey, is this like, is there something going on? Is this normal for you? Am I making you uncomfortable? Like, it's okay to ask those things. And if someone has emotional maturity and emotional intelligence, they will respect that you ask that question. And I had another client also tell me that he didn't know if it was like attractive or not, that he consistently, like not obsessively, but consistently asks like throughout sexual interaction, like, is this okay? Are you comfortable? And he was like, I know it's probably like not the greatest. And I'm like, are you kidding? That's so sexy in a man. I love that. I think that's beautiful. And it doesn't have to come across like it's from like a nervous energy. Like, oh, is this okay if I touched here, but like, are you enjoying this? Like, am I pleasing you kind of way? I think it's beautiful. And it's something that will work to your advantage. Reframes.
So true. And yeah, 100%. And yeah, like exactly as you said there, provided it's being phrased in a way that's not you looking for validation, but rather I want to make sure you're enjoying this because your enjoyment matters to me, then what woman isn't going to find that attractive?
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Like, don't be afraid to just be yourself and just like, you know, I was talking about this with my client last night where he had told a girl had something had happened basically with sexual performance, and she said, like, is it me? And he was like, are you kidding me? You're the fucking hottest girl I've ever seen, or something. And I was like, I think that is so endearing. Like, just own it. Like, don't feel like you have to be like, oh, no, it's because, like, you know, I had too much, like, alcohol or whatever. Like, I think it's okay to be like, you know what? Like, you're so hot, you make me nervous. And, like, I don't even know what the fuck I'm doing right now, whatever. Like, I think that's cute and that can work in your favor. And it's so refreshing. I had a guy do that to me once and I was like, fuck, it feels so nice to have a guy just come forward and say, like, you are so sexy, I'm so into you, I don't even know what to like do, rather than being like cool and mysterious and aloof and like, yeah, whatever, like, I got 10 bitches.
Because it never looks cool, mysterious, it never does.
Yeah.
I've had a few experiences in my life where I've not been able to get it up. And I, because of all the times that hasn't happened, and it hasn't happened with someone who had never had sex with before, I will just like be amused by it and obviously assure her that it's got nothing to do with her. I'm the loser here. No, I'll you know, just be cool about it or whatever. They've never had a problem with it, and they've never not wanted to do it again when I was in a better frame of mind to do it. So it really is just like how coolly you can handle it is far more indicative of your ability to have a successful relationship rather than what you say
exactly. So. Like so many people think, oh my God, it's the least common thing ever. If I lose my erection, like shit's gone downhill, or like, oh, I only have 10 minutes of stamina in me. Someone said that to me and I was like, hey, fuck, 10 minutes is good. Like stop watching porn, bro, because that's actually good. Like if you can last 10 whole minutes, you're above 80% of the population, literally. Like, that's a good thing. Like,
what's the average amount of penetrative sex?
2.5
like,
minutes.
It's something like, about 2 minutes, right? Yeah. I remember reading that a few years ago. Bloody hell.
Yeah, like, that's literally the norm, and that's fine. Like, not saying, oh, 10 minutes, good for you, you're better than everyone. But, like, it's funny, just, like, the perceptions that we have about it is you just got to own it. Like, when shit happens.
Definitely.
Fucking own it. And a lot of people, if you are someone that has premature ejaculation, sometimes women feel really good because they're like, oh, my man can't control it around me. Like, as long as she's getting sexual pleasure, or they, or he, whoever your partner is, or they, like, you know, there's always a way to frame it and just be honest and own it. And yeah, just give them what you got. That's absolutely fine.
Boom.
Love Agreed. It. Oh my God, I love having these conversations. Like I've been talking so much about like psychology and self-development lately. I feel like I'm just a little bird being set free.
Yeah, I love it. I love watching you flourish. It's such a joy.
Thanks. Here's the last one I want to go to from my list. That's a little bit heavy, but I really want to answer it for respect to this person. If you're healing from sexual assault / trauma and dating and you don't want to share specifics, but you ask that your date takes things slow, what is the best way to do it? Is it reasonable? Is it okay if I don't want to share my past trauma with others, except that something happened and I'm a work in progress healing it?
Okay. Yeah, that's a tough one. Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Yeah, I'll start. I just think that you are not obligated to share anything about your personal life and history to anyone, and that is absolutely okay. And in fact, as a little like positive silver lining reframe, first of all, I'm really sorry about what happened to you, and it's like having any abuse and especially sexual abuse and trauma around that is so devastating. I'm so sorry to hear that you've gone through that. But if you are to express to someone, hey, I'm not into this, I want to take it slow and I'm not going to answer it, practice putting that boundary in and seeing how they respect your boundary. It's actually a great opportunity to see if someone is going to respect the boundaries. One of my clients the other day was telling me that she started dating a guy very casually. I don't know if she's only met him like a couple of times. And he pointed out self-harm scars and said, oh, like compassionately, like what happened here? And she was like, actually, I don't feel like talking about it. And he was like, yeah, fair enough. And that is a green flag, like just blatant respect for it. He or your partners or they, she, whatever, are not owed an answer about what happened to you. If you want to share it or disclose it, it's up to you. But I think it's, first of all, I do think it is important to say if you have specific triggers, because from the other hand, I did work with a guy, one guy messaged me and one guy I work with, who had engaged in a sexual encounter with a woman, accidentally triggered some a trauma from their past and did not know that it would be an extremely traumatizing thing if they were to, say, wrap their hand in the back of their hair or touch their neck, for example. Wow. So it's important that if you're aware of your triggers, to really express it, because both those guys I spoke to were absolutely gutted. They felt as though they had done something really, really horrific and so worried about like these women they had slept with because they had accidentally re-traumatized them, and in both times ended horrifically with crying, tears, leaving and ghosting. So don't feel like you have to share it. Just be like, hey, like I want to take things slow. And then maybe when you get to that step and you build that intimacy, you just be like, please, like respect my boundary. Or if you want to keep your shirt on for a bit or whatever it is, like you do whatever you're comfortable with, essentially.
Definitely. Yeah, I fully agree with that. One thing I would say is, and I'd also like to say I'm very sorry to hear that's happened to you. That's always horrible to hear. I would say that, like, it's not unusual for a man or woman to say they want to take things slow anyway. So I think that's enough information to give them for now. And if they're someone you're meant to be with in the future, that they should respect that. I wouldn't say something like, look, something's happened, but I can't tell you what it is, but I will tell you later, because people's curiosity will make them, like, it'll fester in their mind and that they'll be desperate to know what it is, to the point where they'll seem disrespectful by, come on, tell me. Yeah. But it's, you kind of have to understand from their perspective, it's incredibly curious. They're like, what is it? What could have possibly happened? So I wouldn't allude to it either. Just say, look, you say what you think is best, but an example of something that could be appropriate is, I prefer to take things slow. I want to get to know you better first. I want our relationship to develop first. If that's not going to be good enough for them, then they weren't meant to be anyway.
Yeah, fuck them. Because that's good enough. That's absolutely good enough. Like, you don't even need to provide any more reason you don't want to. That's perfect. I want to take things slow. Done.
Agreed. Yeah. And and look, that's because I'm thinking from my perspective, if I heard a girl say that, or I can't think from the girl's perspective, based on my own experiences, but if I've had a girl say she wants to take things slow, I would just expect that, she wants to make sure that she feels respected, and she perhaps needs to feel more comfortable with me for, like, my mind wouldn't go into, what the hell is wrong with her? So,
yeah.
And I can't speak for every man, but I think rational guys should feel the same way.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. It's not something that should be a turn off. And if it is, then good. You find out really early. Sayonara.
Definitely.
See you later.
Agreed.
Okay, let's move on to your questions. Do you have them or do you want me to get them up?
All right, I do have them.
Okay, good.
So I did have them. All right. How do you manage temptations in a relationship?
Oh, that's hard, isn't it? You go, you start.
All right. So I have had many thoughts on this over the years, and I think one big thing is never, and I look, I'm going to talk about it from a man's perspective. Sorry, it's just easier for me, but please know it always applies to both genders. I would say, like, if in fact, I know this was a dude as well who sent it through, but I would say if there's someone that you find physically attractive, don't form a close-knit relationship with them, because yes. Human nature is such that after enough time together and enough different experiences together, you do start to develop a bond for them. It's just what naturally happens. And a great example of that is how many Hollywood movie stars who've been paid $10 million to pretend they're in love with someone for 6 months and spend every day with them end up cheating on their partner with this person. Like, it's Hollywood maybe is a little left of field for the average person's life, but it is a great example of how this happens. I would say, if you can, purposely don't form close-knit relationships with people you find attractive. By even doing it, like, the moment that you start to feel like it's inappropriate, I'm not saying it's too late, like, you can't stop yourself, but it's like, you've already gone too far. You should already start pulling it back from there. As soon as you ever realize that, then you should start pulling it back. But the easiest way to do it is not to put yourself in the position in the first place. Just don't do it. Now, I imagine this has already happened to you. How do you manage temptations? I think you should take as an indication that you're presumably with a partner who you do love and you have had great attraction to in the past. That's why you're together in the first place. Perhaps that's dwindled a little bit, particularly with the excitement of this new person, but I think you should take it as an indication that you clearly need to reform that bond, regrow that bond with your partner right now. Like, I think you should see that as a cry to help for your relationship. And one other little point that I wanted to put on it as well. Temptations at work. temptations with people other than your partner? No, I've lost it. Perhaps it'll come to me, but they're my thoughts.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And like my first thought is, if it's multiple temptations coming at you, like have a reality check on what's going around here. Like, is there something that you're desperately craving and seeking? Is it approval? Are you putting yourself in situations where women are engaging in flirtatious conversations with you repeatedly or sliding into your DMs, for example? Are you engaging in... I'm just going to mention it like as well, like I know people get a bit defensive on it, but like if you're following like Hazel Hot Instagram models and watching a lot of porn and things like that, it literally rewires your brain to push you to seek and analyze women's sexual satisfaction to you and what they would do for you and how, and like rating them, etc. Like you're constantly immediate thoughts upon putting your eyes on a woman is... are they worthy of sex with me or would I have sex with them, for example? So if you find yourself, it's really common as well in young men. So don't beat yourself up about it. Like it is a biological drive often that we consider. And sometimes it's something that we train out. Sometimes it's something we age out. But don't, if you're really, really struggling with it, consider stopping those things. Because a lot of these people that have messaged me about this, like many, many issues, you'd be shocked, stem from porn use. And it starts like that. And then 5 years later, it's, you know, something drastic. But also I think as well, like if you have low self-esteem in yourself, that can be another reason why temptation comes across so significantly and so strongly to you, because you're desperately subconsciously seeking validation and approval. And the best source of validation and approval is going to be from an attractive woman in your eyes many of the times, because that's going to be what strokes your ego and makes you feel good. And once you learn that one time, fuck, that felt good, someone just told me I was handsome or whatever, then that's going to be something that your body stores and thinks, let's get that again. Let's seek that again. So then they're kind of like, so the next time an attractive woman comes around, you're immediately drawn to her in the hopes that she will get attraction. Here's the thing about like, I feel like I used to do this a lot in the past where I would engage with men and be always like really funny and jokey and always say, you're so handsome, I love him, he's so hilarious, blah, blah, blah. Always culling like people at work. And then I realized like, why am I getting like stalked or harassed or like misconstrued emotion? Some people are just really warm or bubbly and open. I'm not anymore. But like, because it can just be misconstrued. So don't take it because someone is smiling and laughing at you or even telling you you're handsome and talented that it means that they want to fuck you and dealing with like the temptation. So have some reality checks as well, I think is really, really important. The hardest place to fight temptation is at the workplace, because you can't avoid it. You bond with people depending on your, like, basically, let's be honest, all types of work are basically stressful these days. Everyone's stressed at work. So when you're both stressed, it gives you something to bond and connect over, which makes it harder to like, you have that shared experience. And when you're stressed, so you're both stressed and someone's making you feel good and they're making, and you're making them feel good. It's a, that's how chemistry aligns basically, where that's like kind of like you're on that wavelength. And when Neil and I would allow questions, this one would come in all the time about attraction for coworkers. So my advice is, one, like Matt said, distance yourself as much as possible. As soon as you notice an attraction, of course your body and mind is going to be pushing you, be like, go talk to them, like be near them, because you want to, you crave it. But you need to, like, you know, put your head first and set that boundary in, because the more times that you can proactively put a boundary in and shut it down, the easier it's going to become and the less temptation is going to like rock your world basically. And the other thing to consider is like, is it something missing in your relationship? Is it a low self-esteem? Is it grass as green as syndrome? Like, find the source of what's actually going on. Like, do you have, you know, do you just desire women too much, like excessively with porn use or whatever? Is it the grass is greener where you're constantly wondering about, like, if I was single, what would that be like? Is there something missing in your relationship? So when women message me this, what I often find is that they're missing, like, connection with their partner. They miss someone making them feel good, paying them attention, noticing when they get their hair cut. And with men, when they message me, it's they miss feeling desired and feeling like wanted and feeling hot. So like, is that something that you can bring into your relationship again? Because that often is the key. And when I direct people to do that, every single time they have come back to me and said, yeah, it was as simple as that. As soon as I like redirected that energy into my own relationship, my crush was gone. And 10 days later, I'm like, oh, what did I ever see in you?
It's wild. Yes, that's so true. Yeah. One quick addition to that as well is a quick public service announcement that when you like someone, and let's go with the colleague example, you know how they say like, or sorry, they don't necessarily say, but people who have this experience often have this idea like, but what if this was my soulmate all along and I was with the wrong person and I can't help that? So first of all, you look at the reasons why. It's like, oh, well, they're more exciting and I connect with them more and they're so nice to me and we have so much in common. It's like, of course, when you compare that to a strong or a long-term relationship, it's always going to seem more exciting. You're getting a bit of validation for this person, but not enough to know if they quite like you yet. Like that's such an exciting position to be in. So comparing that to your long-term relationship in which you're content, well, perhaps not content if you're getting temptations elsewhere, but it's always going to come off second best. And 1% of the time, yeah, they were meant to be your soulmate and you've only just met them after you with your partner. 99% of the time, the best you can hope for, if you go and leave a long-term relationship, whether that's marriage, kids, a house you've bought together, whatever the implications, the best you can hope for it is a honeymoon period with the new person 99% of the time. And then when you pass that and you start to see them for what they really are and you realize how misaligned you are compared to your old partner, don't come crying to me. Yeah, no, it's a horrible position and it's one many people have found themselves in. So keep that in mind.
Oh my God.
During the initial phase.
Just go on fucking Reddit for 10 minutes. Like it is hell every second relationship that's so pose is I left my wife or I left my wife, but sometimes I left my husband for a coworker and 6 months have passed and I've made the biggest mistake of my life. It is so fucking common. Everyone has flaws. This is the thing, but you don't see those flaws. Like even you, as you see me, like Matt sees me now, I'm sitting here, I've got makeup on, I'm being like, you know, we're fun, we're talking, we're laughing. And then the way Adrian sees me last night, he comes home and I'm like this sweaty pregnant woman complaining of sore hips. Like, you know, like, it's very different. It's completely different. Who you are with your partner when you're safe and you're comfortable with them, and then you have a woman that is showcasing themselves in a way that isn't accurate of their entire personality or being, is extremely different. It's very different. Definitely. And the thing is, you're tempted by that woman. You get with that woman 6 months later. She's going to be also complaining about it's all back or something and like waxing her eyebrows or her upper lip in front of you. You know, like it's just, you know, the grass is green is where you water it, basically.
Boom. So
in
true.
A nutshell. Yeah, love that. That one's so common though. It's like you got to be a little bit easy on yourself because it is so common. But really just like,
very true.
Just work on it, like invest your time and energy into it, like figure out what your priorities are. If it's your relationship, then do something about it.
Okay. Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah. All right. What else you got?
How many dates before you should ask for exclusivity? How many dates should you go on before you ask for exclusivity? Please continue.
No, I feel like this is more like this is definitely in your like ballpark. You must get this question all the time at work.
I do get it a lot actually, and I don't think there's a magic number, and you know every relationship's different. And it depends how comfortable you are and what you're both looking for and how open you've been. But if we want to, you know, if there has to be a definitive answer, on average, and I've done quite a bit of research into this before because a lot of people have asked. It normally happens 2 to 3 months in. Whether that means that's what you should stick with is you've got to figure that out based on your relationship. But what I would say is it's best to do it after a pretty decent period of getting to know the person, because it tells them a few things if you've waited a while. And one, it tells them that you're not the type of person to make impulse rash decisions, and that you've actually taken the time to get to know them, and that this is something you actually want. So there's more of that commitment and confidence for them if you do wait a little bit. And, you know, that could be after 5 or 6 dates, perhaps, at least. It also does give you enough time to figure out if this is something you want, because you're just afraid other guys might have her, or you lust after her, or you think it'll help you get more out of her in the bedroom. Like, you want to make sure you overcome all those own things yourself. And I don't care how self-aware you claim to be. I think I'm the most self-aware man on earth, and I'm constantly wrong. I constantly find myself to be wrong about stuff. I don't really think I'm – I actually do. I actually do think I'm super self-aware. But no, I'm – and, yeah, like I constantly, like, will have one thought and then the next day realize, holy shit, I'm so glad I didn't make a decision because, yeah I was, clouded by whatever. I would say that – you should take the time for your own sake as well to make sure it's something you actually want. And taking a little bit of time also gives them the confidence that you're the type of man to make a – sorry, this was from a dude as well, actually. But, the type of person who's making a logical, thought-out decision.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. I think, like, as well, like, however long it takes you to realize that there are a lot of things that align for you, and if you dread the idea of being – not exclusive, you can talk about exclusivity earlier and things like that, but stepping into like a more formal relationship and you know, should you meet my family kind of thing, like, take it seriously. That being said, I'm like such a hypocrite saying that, like, literally by 2 months Adrian and I were living together and had a joint bank account but never with any other man. I just knew it immediately. I was like, yeah, this guy is the one. I knew it, like, straight off the bat. And I've also always liked my men, like, shy and dorky and obsessed with me. They were like, I cannot wait one more day without you being my girlfriend. That's always been my, like, cup of tea. But I would never recommend that to anyone else ever. Like, someone said to me the other day, she was wondering if she should move in with her boyfriend after 2 months. And I was like, don't you fucking dare. Absolutely don't. She was like, but you did. And I was like, well, it's different. Like, all right. I studied behavioral science counseling and relationship counseling for 10 years. I'm qualified.
That does help. That does help. That's a really good point as well. I've just totally blanked on it though. What were you saying just before that around?
When your values and things align, like, sort that out. Was that it?
Thank you. And like, as for like, it happened within 2 months, you and Adrian were pretty advanced in the relationship. That can randomly happen as well. So yeah, that's why there is no perfect answer for this. Yeah. It's not necessarily like, obviously you and Adrian are a fantastic couple, but if it does take you 3 months to become exclusive with someone, it doesn't mean you can't have an Adrian and Eliza relationship as well. Yeah. That's important to note.
Yeah. You know what they say? Like, I don't even know what they say now. The slowest candles burn brightest. Like, what's that saying? Something about a nice quote about slow burn, basically. Slow burns longest. I don't know. But basically the spark doesn't sizzle out. I think like what happened with Adrian and I was a fluke. Like we just so happened to be aligned in every aspect of our relationship and life, therefore, afterwards. But I would absolutely never recommend that again to anyone, because it was when you think about it, it was reckless. The only we didn't move in with each other like on a lease. Like, we literally lived next door to each other, basically, like in separate apartments. We both had a place we could leave to. We just started staying together every night. And then every like 2 weeks, we were doing farm trips. Farm stays was like our thing, so we were like, let's just start a like joint bank account rather than doing I pay for this trip, you pay for that trip, whatever, we'll just chuck a couple $100 in. That's just how it started. Smart. It wasn't like we're like, okay, well, let's, you know, I've met you 10 days ago, let's get give me your bank details, let's combine finances. So it was just like a cute little like farm trip bank account. That's how it started. And then after a few years, cool, ended up being our home loan. So
yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. But
very Yeah, cool.
It's always safer to take it slow, but not too slow. I'll say that.
Very good. I certainly agree with that. The final question I received was, what are the signs a woman gives that it's okay to approach her?
I saw a really good example of this the other day when I took my son to a park and there was a little girl there. She was a little toddler, a little bit older than Remy. And she got on her knees and she started patting her knees and she was like, come here, it's okay, come on, come here. And I was like, that is a green sign that you can go to her, Remy. So off you go. So if a woman beckons you and says, come over, it's okay, you can approach. That's the most telling sign.
I tell clients that all the time.
But I think like the reality is like you're going to get like inklings and you know, I guess instincts on it, whether it be like a smile or a nod, but you're never going to know. Like if I make eye contact across the room with someone, no matter who it is, I'm going to smile at them. And that's probably why so many strangers come up to me and talk to me, because they're thinking I've given them the all clear or whatever. And yeah, it's not like, right, I'm like, you know, be gone, you witch or whatever. Like I'll still be like, oh, sorry. Like, well, I'm not apologizing for smiling, but like, oh, no, not interested kind of thing. And that's fine. Like, it's not like you should never have approached. But just, yeah, I don't actually, you might think differently, but I don't think that there is a solid green flag you can have that means 100% go. You just got to kind of trust your gut and stick. I can tell you what sign means no very easily, but true, go is more gray area. What do you think?
I wanted you to go first because I thought this would be the one question where we'd have quite different answers, but no, it's pretty much spot on what you said. I always tell clients, you've got to be okay with not knowing whether or not she likes you and just approaching either way. And of course, being respectful in your approach and graceful if you're rejected, but provided you've got those two things down pat, then it doesn't matter. There are millions of videos online about the signs girls give off to suggest that the secret signs she's interested. I just think they're all a fucking waste of time. And if I look at the clients who have the most fulfilling dating lives, it's that they have the courage to try without knowing whether they'll succeed or fail, rather than those who've become these fantastic body language readers who only do it because she's ticked 7 of the 8 boxes. Like, I think you can be trapped in overthought by trying to look for all the signs. I'm trying to think of examples that could contradict that, but I think that's generally the case. Like, if a girl does smile at you, it can be helpful, but I think it's also dangerous to create expectations based on subtle signs she's given off as well. And the perfect example that you just mentioned there is like, you're friendly, so you smile at people. And that's the case for a lot of people. And the thing is as well, if you're looking for the signs, then you'll start seeing a smile and thinking, oh no, she's just being friendly, she doesn't like me, so you won't approach her anyway. So
such a good point. Exactly. Like once you get a rejection because you followed a sign, you're like, that won't mean shit to me anymore. That's a really good point.
Exactly.
The behavioral cues are, you know, take it with a grain of salt. I did a course on it when I was studying counseling and behavioral science was about flirtation. And when they showed like these are the signs of women being flirtatious, I was like, fuck, I do every single one of those signs all day, every day. I like to pull my hair because it feels nice. Like I just like touching soft hair and whatever. I just always touch my hair. I'm not fucking flirting with everyone because I do that. Like, it's just simple things like if you're showing your wrists or you're moving your head out of your way of your collarbones or you look the big one that they emphasize. This is like they showed us like this clip from like the 90s. And the big like go sign was if she like looks down and then looks up at you like from under her eyelashes. Like, that's the like you're getting laid tonight kind of signal from a woman according to this thing. Wow. But I think it's easier to observe like when signs are a no. Like if you start approaching someone, this is why I like, you know, Matt and I will talk about this in a minute, like have an upcoming workshop, and like one of the things that like I'll be getting into or we'll be getting into as well, like when you approach someone to start, like don't fucking rapid fire approach them. Like if you go a little bit slowly, it's amazing what things you can pick up as well. Like if someone looks at you and immediately averts eye contact and turns her back to you, probably not interested in you and probably not comfortable talking to you. Or if they, especially if they scurry away, like take it as a no, don't chase after them. But yeah, there, or even just like, yeah, tone of frame and how to approach and what angle to approach. There are things you can do to what's most important, like Matt said, was giving it a go in a way that's respectful, but also in a way that signals I'm a safe person approaching you. So like I would say, like, don't walk up to someone from behind and tap them on the back, because what that happens, especially for women, is it immediately surges your body with threat, like urgency, even just temporarily, 1 second of a threat. And then that's the feeling that they've aligned to you then. So they, what you want to signal in their body is safety. So come in at an angle where they can see you, where it's slow, even if you say hi from 2 feet out before you finish walking there. So they have like a millisecond to process that you're approaching them. Is amazing what their body, and when their body feels safe, is what they're going to signal to, like, how productive your interaction can be. So anyway, if you want to learn more about that, there's a lot we'll be going into in our workshop. Everyone's heard me talk about it on here a couple of times, and maybe like Matt, you can do the spiel this time and hear it from your side. And
So essentially Eliza and I put together a 6-week workshop called the authentic it's a blueprint for an authentic guide to dating. And it's funny, like, I'm going to talk about how we were discussing the marketing is, like, I was talking about, like, just be yourself, but, you know, date the women you want. Like, I was thinking about different ways to phrase it, and Eliza had a great point, which was a lot of guys feel like being themselves isn't working, so that's not going to be a good way to market it. And it's like, after you mentioned that about a month ago, I've had so many conversations with guys where we've had conversations about being yourself. And it's funny how many, like, so authenticity, first of all, is different to being yourself. It's like a more socially acceptable version of yourself. So it's actually considering the other person's perspectives as well. But essentially, so many guys aren't even being themselves the way they think they are anyway, and don't realize how much power and confidence and attractiveness there is in being the most refined versions of themselves. So essentially, like, we've broken down exactly what that means into 6 separate modules, and covered it incredibly comprehensively, if I may say so myself. But it's essentially a way to create a fulfilling and confident dating life for yourself without having to ever be someone else. Like, yeah, you will always, and throughout the process, besides the fact that, like, it will lead to a more fulfilling dating life, you will just be more comfortable being yourself and more confident and more unapologetic about being yourself as well. And I think that's what really drew me to, besides the fact that I love your content, part of what drew me to working together with you on this project is I think there's such a gap as guys see, like, that there's, yeah, so many guys are, they're so close to it, but they're just missing a couple of little pieces that where they can be themselves and live the dating lives they want. I don't know if that was a spiel, but just some musings I've had over the last few weeks about the workshop.
Absolutely. It's so accurate. And I think, like, what my favorite part is that it's not just, I think people often approach it when they're supporting men through dating coaching, especially like typical dating coaches, is here's the tools, here's the strategies. If she moves her hair off the collarbone, that's your go sign. And then it doesn't work. So you throw more money at these people and then you're in the cycle, and it actually just decreases your self-esteem overall. It has the opposite effect on it. So you feel like you need them more. But the thing is that, like, first of all, like I said at the very start, Matt and I are ethical. Ding, like, I mean, that's like the bare minimum, but we are. And also, like, not only do you get like the tools and strategies that are legitimate, like, for example, like we were saying then about like eliciting safety is a green flag and that's like attractive, and like knowing and teaching you what's attractive about you and harnessing that and how to embrace that and engage that and learning it about yourself if you're unaware of that. Like the other day I was talking to my client and I was talking about this to Matt before this podcast, who was talking about like women being out of his league because they're good looking, and I was like, my client, like, this guy is so fucking funny. This guy is hilarious. Like, what makes you think that they're out of your league because of the way they, like, look when you can walk into the room and you're, like, so social, so funny? Like, that is, those are attractive qualities that he's not recognizing himself that are massively working to his advantage. And if you're shy and awkward, then I'm into that. That's my type of man. Like, that's endearing. That to me is cute and sexy. Like, that, whatever it is that you think or haven't realized within yourself, we're going to help you realize that. So not only are you getting the tools and strategies when it comes to dating, but you're also getting that self-development piece and that self-healing piece and the self-esteem and the confidence and the, and that self-compassion, most importantly, which I like, no one likes to hear that because it sounds boring, but trust me, it's key. it's really key.
That's so true. And I've had so many situations like that as well, where a guy's fixated on one particular trait he doesn't have, and he's got so much else that will do so well for him in his dating life if he can just overcome the insecurity around it. So exactly as you're saying there, the workshop is a combination of helping you realize and uncover and accentuate the positive points, just as much as it's about overcoming whatever insecurities are holding you back. So like a good example before was, how do I learn to read signs that a girl likes me? Fuck that, dude. How about we get you to a point where you can go up and approach, and if you get turned down, you move on to the next one with the same enthusiasm you had for the last. Going in a bunch. There's so many directions to go with talking about this workshop, but if you want more details, please reach out to either of us, because there's quite a bit we're covering, and you may not be sure if it's right for you, or you're not sure if based on your particular dating challenges it's going to be helpful. So we'll both be very honest. We've mm-hmm. both turned down as many people who've come on board as we've signed up, because we want to make sure that you guys are going to get benefit out of it. So please reach out to us, and we're happy to have an open conversation. We won't just be selling you, we'll be qualifying you.
Yeah, absolutely. And Matt, I feel so bad because I wrote Matt in being like, we'll do a mini app, like, do you have 20 minutes on Thursday night? We are, as per usual. And I was like, if we do a mini app as well, we can do like maybe like drop, like, because Easter egg, they're like kind of like small episodes and just quick and to the point, and maybe we could like slide a little hidden discount in there. This has been a full podcast, but it might, what are your thoughts?
I think I think we slide it in.
That's it. That's the goal, isn't it?
What do you reckon?
I think yes.
Yeah, sorry, that pun was unintended, but I think we should continue talking about the discount.
Yes, we
you
should.
Guys will be the ones sliding it in after you do our workshop. No, okay, stop me. Stop me by talking about it, please.
Yes. So tell us, what is it and how did we get there?
Okay, so are you, you tell us.
Okay, so I think if you're interested in joining up with us, the program, well, the workshop starts in a few weeks, probably at the very end of May, if not very start of June. So very soon, if you're interested in joining up and you're listening just to this podcast, we're not going to probably put it anywhere else. Well, if we have, we haven't discussed it, but this is for the people that have come through, got to the end. We'd like to offer 20% discount. So slide into either our DM saying sex sells, and we'll put it in there for you and process that for you. And like Matt said, if you want to have a talk, gauge your interest in it, see if it's going to be worthwhile for you. And also, like we've been saying as well, like, we're not going to push you to do something that we don't think is actually going to be beneficial for you, because I actually have a board of ethics to comply by as well. So, it's really important to us both that it's something that you get a lot of value out of. So if you're interested, let us know. Use discount if you want or don't. That's fine. But anyway, Matt, thank you so much for coming in as usual and spending much more time than I was looped you in for. My apologies.
Oh, please. It still felt like a mini ep to me. It was so fast. Flowing conversation. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, lovely. All right, guys. Well, I'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.